All right, here we go. Happy Tuesday, and we hope you write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. It's 800-941-SHAWN. If you want to join us, we have breaking news from John Solomon and Greg Jarrett coming up about 1 hour from right now after the news at the top of the next hour. Also, Nigel Farage on the president's trip to Great Britain. The media is only focusing in on those protesters that are there, but there are obviously many that love the president in Great Britain, and he's been given the red carpet treatment by the royal family and everybody else. It was pretty funny because we have a report today that the giant Trump baby balloon, which has been a staple at many of these anti-Trump protests in London, apparently was temporarily put out of commission earlier today by a British Trump supporter. Washington Examiner reports that a Trump supporter fed up with the protesters in London demonstrated by stabbing the massive Trump baby balloon. He goes, "I'm going for it. I'm going." An unidentified woman said in a video posted earlier today. And this is a disgrace, a national disgrace. And the president of the U.S. is the best president ever. Shame on you. Don't touch me, as angry protesters confronted her. You got to laugh. Interesting thing. We do not know who the next prime minister of Great Britain is going to be. It's not going to be Theresa May, as she has been unable to solidify any plan for the Brexit vote, which the people of Great Britain clearly wanted, which the president wants, and would benefit greatly Great Britain. The royal family has rolled out the red carpet treatment for the president with a state dinner, and you know, it's been pretty interesting to watch from afar. But still, it's just interesting. I mean, Donald Trump brings with him this disruptive, controversial, iconoclastic, in your face, I'm not taking your crap attitude everywhere. As evidence, just before he landed, he was taking on the idiot mayor of London who made some sarcastic comments about the president. And by the way, the guy's doing a horrible job. And the president called him out on it. But there seems to be a good relationship with the royal family, which I think is good for everybody. I'm watching the Democrats really closely here, and I know that there are many of you wondering, thinking, perplexed, maybe fearful even of House Democrats that are now ratcheting up impeachment talk. Remember last week, Robert Mueller started, you know, the week by going into a long nine and a half minute diatribe about why he didn't reach a conclusion. He said he was unable to reach a conclusion on the issue of whether you can or cannot indict a sitting president based on DOJ policy. And then within hours, he had to retract and clarify those remarks because he had repeatedly said the opposite, that that was not a consideration. And so that took all the wind out of the sails of the, you know, rage, psychotic, hate Trump media and hate Trump Democrats. So Democrats are in a bit of a quandary because they got their hardcore Ocasio-Cortez base and Congresswoman Omar and Tlaib base that are demanding impeachment. Nancy Pelosi seemingly sees this as political suicide, but I don't think she has much say in terms of what's going to happen in the end, because she's going to have to do whatever that base says. She won by the narrowest of margins. And since their first contempt citation against the attorney general has had zero impact, well, now House Democrats, they want to give it another shot. I mean, imagine how stupid Democrats can be that they're asking the attorney general of the United States of America, chief law enforcement official in the country, they're asking for a total, complete, unredacted version of the Mueller report, which, by the way, they pretty much have available to them if they'd ever take the time and go over and look at it. And but for one sentence and seven partial sentences, the entire report is laid bare for them to see. Few of them have taken advantage of the opportunity to go over and look at it. But they still act like that is a big deal. But the problem is they're asking the Attorney General Bill Barr to violate the law in the process, because that would reveal grand jury testimony and information, which by law he is not allowed to do. And the fact that it comes from this idiot Gerald Nadler or this other idiot, the cowardly Schiff, makes it even more interesting because Nadler, in his case, well, he didn't even want under the independent counsel statute. He didn't want the Starr report ever made public, but by law, it had to be. And we had 11 specific charges against then-President Bill Clinton in terms of crimes that he actually committed. And so as a result, they got rid of the independent counsel statute. They moved to the special counsel statute, which gives the ultimate authority in deciding when a report comes in to the attorney general. And the attorney general took next to no time in realizing that there's no evidence that rises to the level of an impeachment or a charge against the sitting president, and none of it was based on any DOJ policy that took into consideration constitutional issues about indicting a sitting president. Rod Rosenstein joined him in that opinion. He was the one that first hired Mueller because Jeff Sessions had recused himself. The Office of Legal Counsel similarly weighed in the same way. So, you know, and the fact that Bob Mueller wants to change the standard of, well, I can't say that he's innocent. That is not the way the justice system in this country works in the first place. So they've already given a contempt citation to Bill Barr, and now they're going after Don McGahn, and now they want to bring Hope Hicks back. You know how much it costs probably Hope Hicks, who worked for the president, what, for 2 years in the Oval Office? Probably cost her more in lawyers to testify before the varying committees and the Mueller team than she probably made trying to serve her country and trying to serve the president and his agenda. Anyway, the Attorney General Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross are both facing a contempt of Congress vote unless they hand over documents by Thursday on efforts to put a citizenship question on the 2020 census. The chairman of the House of Representatives panel warned on Monday. Congressman Elijah Cummings, chairman of the House Oversight and Reform Committee, sent the letters to Barr and Wilbur Ross, warning them that they had until Thursday to comply with the subpoena after having failed for 2 months to produce the documents. By the way, this is straight out of the Obama Handbook 101. Because remember, Lois Lerner never testified. And how many times was Eric Holder called in to testify? Only the difference between Obama and President Trump is that Obama used executive privilege to prevent Holder from ever testifying. Now, in the Mueller report, well, this president never invoked executive privilege. They encouraged everybody that the special counsel wanted to speak to go and spend the time with the special counsel. And they also handed over 1.5 million documents, and they also answered questions directly from the president of the United States. How you can't be any more cooperative. After a 9-month FBI investigation that found no Trump-Russia collusion or conspiracy, after the House Intelligence Committee investigation, after the bipartisan Senate investigation, and now the Mueller report, well, now this becomes an issue of harassment. How many times does somebody have to go testify before these committees? And God forbid they say one little thing that might slightly differ from what they said before. Well, then they're now subjecting themselves to a perjury trap and don't think that this Congress wouldn't do it in 2 seconds. No, and every American has the right to go in there and say no and say, I plead the fifth. Now, I personally hope they call me in one day because I have a lot of questions for them. And we've offered airtime to Nadler and the cowardly Schiff. I've actually offered Schiff 4 straight hours on TV because I got my own dossier. Every lie he's ever told. You notice they all say that Trump is guilty of something, but they can't name what the something is. They keep saying that he deserves to be impeached, but they can't say, you know, what high crime, what misdemeanor did the president commit? And they just make it up as they go along and they try to create a lot of noise and they get their friends in the left-wing media mob to go along with whatever the narrative happens to be. And there's a lot of noise, but there's and a lot of smoke, but there's no fire. You know, and by the way, Democrats can ease America into thinking about impeaching Trump, but good luck with that strategy because I don't think it's going to work. So if they want to hold Barr and McGahn and Wilbur Ross in contempt, that's fine, but I don't think the American people at this point are putting up with this. I think the American people have had enough of all of it. And I think they realize that nothing is being done by them for the country, and that's not a good sign for them. And in the meantime, the real story, which is, again, Act One, if you listen to the Attorney General, it can't be any more clear. Mueller had his time. Mueller had the resources. Mueller's competent. Mueller even hired an abusively biased team, and he still found no collusion, no obstruction. So now that is over. And the Attorney General said as much to Lindsey Graham. But the issues of a rigged investigation into Hillary Clinton and her clear violation of the Espionage Act with a private server in a mom-and-pop shop bathroom closet and then subpoenaed emails deleted and acid washed with bleach bit and devices busted up and SIM cards removed, that's very much in play. And then the FISA abuse issue, which is, premeditated lying and a fraud committed against the FISA court judges, that too is in play. And then, of course, an attempt to influence the 2016 election with those Russian lies, that's also in play. And then we have the issue of the insurance policy by the very same people that were investigating Trump. That too is in play. Sorry, needed a drink. But there's a big report by John Solomon, who'll join us in the next hour, that Hillary Clinton's Russia collusion IOU and the answers that she owes America. And there are a lot of them. You know, Hillary Clinton, every step of her career, the same with her, the same with Bill Clinton, they've been getting money. I think I was the only one bringing up the fact that she says she cares about women's rights, gay rights, and religious freedom, but she took money vis-a-vis the Clinton Foundation from countries that practice Sharia, that abuse women, that kill gays and lesbians, and persecute Christians and Jews, and it seemingly bought her silence on the practices of these countries. Now, that to me is unconscionable, because I think women's rights advocates, and I think gay rights advocates, and I think those that believe in religious liberty like I do ought to join forces with me, because I don't want anything to do with those countries, and I don't want their money, which is one of the reasons for all these years I pushed for the issue of energy independence. As soon as we're energy independent, guess what? We don't need oil, energy, the lifeblood of our economy from the Middle East. You want to bring Putin to his knees? Yeah, he's a hostile actor. Devin Nunes warned everybody what he'd do in 2016 in terms of election interference, but he warned us in 2014, and Obama and Biden never paid attention. All right, as we roll along, 800-941-SHAWN, you want to be a part of the program, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to join us. You know, it's interesting, because you watch on the Democratic side, you see that Biden is now lurching to the left on climate change in a desperate attempt to please this lunatic base of AOC and company, who's the real Speaker of the House, Pelosi's Speaker in name only. But anyway, if Democrats think that Biden is their moderate candidate who's willing to stand up to the left-wing loonies that want to take this country and change it into a socialist utopia and basically run the country over the cliff, well, you can cross Biden off the list, because the great moderate hope just got steamrolled by the, you know, radical left in the party, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because 2 weeks after she was criticizing him for being too cautious on climate change, and remember, she's pushing this insane Green New Deal, which is no oil, no gas, everything's free, and by the way, we'll get rid of the combustion engine, cows, and airplanes. But anyway, so she's been criticizing crazy, creepy, sleepy Uncle Joe, who now has had to come up with his own version of Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal, which is nothing short of socialism on steroids and a guaranteed prescription for poverty, but warning that we must take drastic action now to address the climate disaster facing the nation and our world, Biden said earlier today, unveiling a wide-ranging plan to combat climate change and transform America's economy. Now, why didn't he push this during the Obama-Biden years? Anyway, using the Green New Deal as his framework, Biden is announcing that he's calling for a clean energy revolution to confront the crisis, and do what America does best, and that's solve big problems with big ideas. And the price tag for the Biden plan for a clean energy revolution and environmental justice is $1.7 trillion over the next 10 years. By the way, what does it mean, environmental justice? I guess Biden threw that in for the, you know, Al Gore wing of the party. So, you know, now Biden basically is now the Democratic Party's moderate savior and just crafting policy proposals so they pass muster with the radical left wing. And by the way, new CNN poll shows that Biden and his lead is dwindling quickly. You know, previous poll had him at 21 points. Now he's down to 14. So sleepy, creepy Uncle Joe, I guess, feels the need to go hard left. Oh, I forgot the best part. I can't believe it. Thanks, Scott Shannon. 25 till the top of the hour. We now see Biden feels compelled if he wants to get the nomination, because he literally is getting hammered by everybody on the left for not being crazy left enough. So he comes up with this insane version of Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. It is an amazing development how afraid all of these longtime Democrats, hard left liberals, are just scared to death of what Ocasio-Cortez may say about them, or this team of radical leftists may say about them. So he comes up with his own version of the Green New Deal, $1.7 trillion over the next 10 years. Now, the version basically is, oh, we're going to come up with new energy. Now, look, if we find a better source of energy, I don't care what it is. Maybe, you know, once I interviewed an inventor who actually believes that there's more energy in the air if we could only tap into it. And it's all part of the gravitational pull of the Earth, et cetera. Way out of my league. But the idea is that if we could somehow tap that energy, you have an endless supply. The world has an endless supply of energy that is that clean, that's been there the whole time, that every society can tap into. Well, that the level of wealth and prosperity that can be generated from that is unlimited. But in the meantime, we live in a different world. And that world is, we don't have these green new energies. Whoever finds that new development is going to be a multi-billionaire trillionaire. It's not going to be me, because that's not my area of expertise by any stretch. But in the meantime, oil and gas and coal remains the lifeblood of every economy on Earth. And that's why I've been pushing this now for so many years on the radio and TV, that America needs to be energy independent for a lot of different reasons. Number one, we control the price by the amount of production we have in terms of oil and gas and coal. We have more resources than all of these countries in the Middle East put together. We can bring Russia to its knees. We won't rely on Middle Eastern oil as a necessity for our economy. It creates incredible career jobs for Americans that we called in the last election the forgotten men and women, those that have most benefited from the Trump recovery. And also, we can help our allies in Western Europe out, so they're not dependent on Vladimir Putin and the hostile regime of Russia and the hostile actor that he is. We could literally bring Russia and Iran to their knees if in fact we become the world's dominant producer, supplier of energy. I mean, it's just a good idea. Anyway, but what's more interesting over the Biden new Green Deal plan is that, you know, he's now accused of plagiarizing significant passages of his just announced environmental plan. Now, remember, in the 1988 race, he was caught plagiarizing word for word a campaign speech from the British Labour Party leader at the time, Neil Kinnock. And he had to get out of the race because of his plagiarism. Anyway, so he's got this new climate proposal that he put out there, and the language is nearly identical to the exact passages found in proposals by these extreme environmental groups. So Biden and the 2020 candidates, which, you know, again, they contain no citations, no call for increased use of carbon storage technology to fight climate change. But many of Biden's plan, the passages appear to have been lifted verbatim from a proposal outlined by the Carbon Capture Coalition that they put right up on their website. So this guy, John Nelson, who's a left-wing environmentalist, first noticed the similarities earlier today in the paragraph in Joe Biden's climate plan about carbon capture and sequestration includes language that is remarkably similar to items published previously by the Blue-Green Alliance and the Carbon Capture Coalition. And that's what he tweeted. But anyway, Biden's website also appears to have lifted a section from the Blue-Green Alliance's 2017 letter to the Senate. And then as a Delaware senator, Biden admitted that he failed a class in law school after being caught for plagiarism on a paper. This would now be his third run at plagiarism. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's that funny. And the reality is he needs to now outflank every left-wing wannabe presidential candidate on the Democratic Party side. And he's watching now his lead plummet. Previously on CNN, he was leading Bernie Sanders by a whopping 21 points. Now it's down to 14. And he didn't show up in California at their Democratic convention over the weekend. I know it's too early to tell on any of this, but I'm not so sure that Joe Biden has. Joe Biden's got a problem. I mean, this guy cannot help himself and speak in a way that doesn't put his foot in his mouth. Then he's got to now defend all things Russia when he was vice president under Barack Obama, because all of this mess, all of this Russian interference didn't happen on Trump's watch. It happened on Obama and Biden's watch. Then he's going to have to defend the Obama-Biden economy, which was a disaster. I mean, they had 8 years to fix the economy. It was the worst recovery since the 40s. I mean, you had 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, lowest labor participation since the 70s. You literally had the only presidency, vice presidency, that never experienced 3% GDP growth in their entire 8 years. You never had under Biden Obama anything that you could call a real economic success story. They say, well, Trump's doing well because we set it up for him. No, Trump's doing well because of his policies, which were clear. Tax cuts, the largest in history, ending burdensome regulation, moving America towards energy independence, and keeping his promises abroad and negotiating better trade deals. All the things that they said would lead to a depression because, as usual, you know, they're wrong. So they've got all the, I mean, he's got a much, I don't think he's got the stamina. I don't think he's got the energy. I don't think he's got the personality. I don't think he's got the juice to become the person that they think he can be. And already we're seeing signs that they're trying to control Biden almost the same way they tried to control Hillary. He doesn't look healthy, particularly to me. Doesn't seem to have the stamina. I mean, when he disappears right after he announces he's running for president for 10 days, that's never a good sign. And Donald Trump, in the meantime, is, you know, he's out there doing rally after rally and traveling to every part of the world and negotiating trade deals and taking on every promise and issue that he made the American people. And we now have the best job market we've ever had since 1969. I mean, we now have nearly 2 million more jobs available than we have people on unemployment. We have the lowest unemployment rate in all of these years. The people that have been disproportionately positively impacted are the very demographics that were negatively disproportionately impacted under Biden Obama. African Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans, women in the workplace, youth unemployment, all setting record lows. And it's all because, yeah, conservatism works. And the president was able to do most of this even without Republican help. And you get the Senate and the House back in 2020 in a second term for Donald Trump and no Robert Mueller and no, you know, endless investigation. There's no telling what the president can do to transform American society for literally the entire decades to come. You know, the Wall Street Journal had a piece, Russia withdraws military support for Venezuela under pressure from Donald Trump. Donald Trump has been more harsh on Russia than any president in modern times. Now, if Vladimir Putin had all this compromising material on Trump, I doubt he would be doing the things he's doing. And I'm telling you right now, America now being energy independent for the first time in 75 years and a net exporter of energy scares the living daylights out of Putin and Russia. And now that the president scored a major foreign policy victory in Venezuela with the report that Russia's yanking all their military support for the Maduro regime because of all the economic pressure applied by Trump to both Russia and Venezuela, played a major role in Moscow's decision to change course. And I'm sure the fake news media mob is never going to find the time to report anything on that, but Russia withdrew key defense advisors from Venezuela, which is an embarrassment for Maduro, as Moscow weighs the leader's political and economic resilience against growing U.S. pressure. But they still have the Cubans on their side, which I don't think is going to make a hell of a lot of difference, to be very blunt. Now, we have some developments that we'll get to at the top of the next hour involving the entire Trump-Russia collusion fantasy, the conspiracy, if you will. During the 2 decades that Hillary Clinton, we now know, served as Senator and Secretary of State, we're getting more information from John Solomon, who's the Executive Vice President and Investigative Reporter for The Hill, that all of these countries regularly donated to the Clinton family charity, the foundation, that they had official business pending before America's most powerful political woman. And what Solomon outlines is a pattern of IOUs that got paid to the Clinton Foundation. It was so pernicious that the State Department even stepped in and tried to execute a special agreement with the charity to avoid the overt appearance of pay to play. Yet still the money flowed in the millions and millions of dollars from foreign countries and Americans alike who were perceived to be indebted to the Clinton machine or in need of their help. And, you know, as all of this now becomes available and everybody begins to see it, this is not going to look pretty. Oh, by the way, they decided to move Paul Manafort to Rikers Island. Can you believe this? I mean, literally the left wants this guy to die in prison. You could see it in every way. Alan Dershowitz is weighing in on this, but, you know, so you have a New York Democratic DA. The guy's name, Cyrus Vance, allowed Harvey Weinstein to run around, you know, free and clear, despite all the allegations against him, even forcible rape. But he's ordered now Paul Manafort to be transferred to probably the most notorious prison hellhole operating in America, and that's Rikers Island. It wasn't that long ago that I had an opportunity to speak to some prisoners at Rikers Island. It didn't go well. And the reason it didn't go well, it was, and the people were nice, but so I was brought in to speak to these prisoners that were graduating a program that was somewhat faith-based. And anyway, I watched for a full hour before I got a chance to speak to these guys. And there was a pastor that just wouldn't stop. And he went on and on and on. And like, I'm watching the body language of the prisoners and they're like, stop, we've heard it enough. They're out of their minds. So I knew I was going to be the last speaker. And anyway, so there was the families that were out there because they graduated this program. And then I had an opportunity to speak. And I said, all right, I know you're restless after the last speaker. I'm only going to speak for 5 minutes. And I'd like to ask the audience out here if they don't mind if I turn my back to them and speak directly to the prisoners here. And, well, you know, they're prisoners, and I went full on street New York, which I kind of grew up being able to talk because I didn't think they were relating to the lofty spiritual talk that they just had for 4 hours. And I went through the list. I said, half of you are coming back here. Half of you will come back and be stupid and ruin your life. That means Half of you are never going to go to McDonald's, never going to go to Wendy's. You're never going to have your own apartment. You're never going to be independent and self-sufficient. And you all have a choice to make. Now, you're either going to go back to your stupid friends that get you in trouble, or you're going to go back to your stupid families that get you in trouble, or you're going to make a decision to find a way, go out on your own, get a job. I don't care what it is. And then I went through the list of jobs that I've done in my life. And then you're going to make sure that you stay out of trouble, stay away from drugs, and stay away from all those people that will help lure you into jail again. Which one do you want to be? Do you want to be the guy that comes back, or do you want to be the guy that lives a happy, healthy life, reformed, and never coming back to this hellhole again? I said the power lies in your decision-making. You've made choices in your life, and they have consequences. You know, you've made mistakes, but now if you come back here, it's not a mistake, it's a choice. You decide what your future is going to be. Thank you very much. Walked off the stage. But I never got invited back. Does that surprise you, Ethan?
Yeah, but I wonder if Linda would have been invited back with her tough talk. She probably would have been cursing up a storm.
There was no reason for me not to be real with them. There was, to go there and, you know, I just looked at them and they didn't want to hear the preaching anymore. And I just said, this is your choice. You made mistakes. Okay, your next choice is a choice, not a mistake. And this is your life. If you stay on the straight and narrow and change it and stay away from crazy people that'll get you in trouble. And this is your life if you're stupid and come back here. And I said, you get to decide. Good luck. God bless you. I did say that, but I never got invited back.
You should have.
I think they were mad. I dropped a lot of F-bombs in that talk. But it's, you know, I was trying to keep it real.
He thrives on insulting people in situations, so this was typical Trump.
Both men, Nixon and Trump, are authoritarian personalities. I think Trump is Nixon on steroids and stilts.
This is a president who I find frightening, have since he's been elected. I know how the machine works. Fortunately, he doesn't yet not fully understand that. I think he can only become more dangerous.
He seems to forget the source of the problem was his own action. But this is typical Trump. We've now watched him in office for quite a while. We watched him during the campaign. And this is standard operating procedure, a man who will not accept responsibility for any of his own actions.
I think this seems to be planned like a murder.
If I had to channel a little of Richard Nixon, I think he'd tell this president he's going too far. This is the sort of stuff of a banana republic. This is what an autocrat does.
All right, that's John Dean from Watergate fame, and all he has is an opinion that he is paid to give on fake news CNN, and his history of in the Watergate case. Nothing else. There is no relevant information that John Dean can bring before Nadler's committee. None based on fact, none based on evidence, except a perception and a rage and a psychotic hatred of all things Donald Trump. We have a lot of new news today, not the least of which is John Solomon, his new column in The Hill. He is the executive vice president, columnist, investigative reporter for The Hill. And it deals with Hillary Clinton's Russia collusion IOU, the answer that she owes America. And, of course, Greg Jarrett, author of the number one New York Times bestseller, The Russia Hoax, the illicit scheme to clear Hillary Clinton and frame Donald Trump, all of which came true and more true than we ever knew. Welcome both of you back to the program. Greg, let me start with you. What does John Dean really offer except opinions and his history of being involved in the Watergate case?
Well, John Dean has a long and distinguished history of lying, obstructing justice. He, of course, paid hush money, supervised it to the Watergate burglars. He ended up going to prison. So this is a guy whose credibility is zero, and he's ever since he got out of prison, and he sort of made a career out of trashing Republicans. He used to be a Republican. I don't know what he is now, except a vacuous pundit. And, you know, it's bewildering to me that any television network would put this guy on the air. I mean, he wrote a best-selling memoir that he didn't even write. It was actually ghostwritten by Taylor Branch. So this is a guy who can't even write, and clearly he can't even think.
All right, John Solomon, you've got breaking news. Came out late last night about Hillary Clinton's Russia collusion IOU and the answers that she owes America. You know, one of the things that we now know more than anything is the fix was in as it relates to Hillary Clinton. We now know that Strzok and Page were laughing and mocking at the fact that Loretta Lynch was running the investigation the entire time, and FBI agents had no sway or say from the very beginning. With that said, they were writing her exoneration on the email server scandal in May of 2016. She was exonerated July 5th, 2016. She was interviewed July 2nd, 2016. And in that interview, she was even allowed to bring two people into the room with Peter Strzok doing the interview. And one of the people, Cheryl Mills, was actually a witness in the case, which is beyond unusual and unprecedented. But great consideration was given, obviously, to Hillary. And the very difference between her and Donald Trump is, well, there was an underlying crime. We know the evidence is incontrovertible, the Espionage Act, but more importantly, the obstruction of justice. There was a reason to delete 33,000 emails and acid wash your hard drive and delete them and beat up your devices with hammers.
Yep, it's amazing. And, you know, you talk about the interview being on July 2nd, 2016. July 5th is the day that Comey makes the announcement that he's not going to ask the Justice Department to file charges against her. And that is the day that the Russia collusion story takes off, because that's the day Christopher Steele walks into the FBI in London to his old handler from Rome and plants the first version of the dossier on the FBI, setting off a six-month effort by the Clinton campaign and all of its surrogates and all of its emissaries to try to flood the FBI with bad intel on Donald Trump until the FBI cries uncle and starts an investigation of Donald Trump and the campaign. And then immediately what happens? It gets leaked to the media. Because in the end of the day, this wasn't about a legitimate counterintelligence investigation. This is about perpetrating a huge, dirty political trick on Donald Trump, using the power of the FBI and the CIA and the other intelligence apparatus. So that timeline that you just laid out is so essential, because it cannot be an irony that Christopher Steele walks into the FBI the day that James Comey is getting rid of the criminal case against Hillary Clinton. These two cases are inextricably linked.
What about your article that talks about two decades as she served as a U.S. senator and secretary of state, and you have all these foreign countries? Now, it was a big issue for me that she had taken so much money, for example, from countries that abuse women and kill gays and lesbians and persecute Christians and Jews, and the foundation was taking in a fortune. I thought it was money that they bought her silence. She says she cares about those issues. She did not. And even more importantly than that, she was getting money specifically on the Uranium One deal to the tune of $145 million as one of nine people to sign off on CFIUS, which allowed Vladimir Putin's network in America, which we knew because of William Campbell, was involved in bribery and kickbacks and money laundering extortion.
Well, what I write the column is that the Clinton way of doing things was that you always had an IOU. If you needed something from the Clintons, you had an IOU and you paid up by making a donation to the Clinton Foundation. It was such a pernicious pattern that the State Department actually tried to create an MOU to at least shine light on it, because everybody knew what was going on. But I use that and say, if that was Clinton's way of having IOUs paid, it's time for the American public to demand an IOU payment from Hillary Clinton. She was the candidate whose campaign and opposition research project foisted upon this country a criminal investigation based on false information that ultimately turned out to be uncorroborated. For 2.5 years, we've suffered through a Russia collusion delusion that wasn't true, and we've used the mechanisms of government to discredit a president and a candidate. And so, remarkably, it's been 18 months since we learned that Christopher Steele's dossier was paid for by the Clinton campaign through its law firm, Perkins Coie. Not once in those 18 months has Hillary Clinton answered a question that was submitted to her by the Senate about what she knew and when she knew it about Christopher Steele and all of this Russia collusion hoax. And not once has a media member who interviewed her many times on stage or on at events or at other places, not one question asking her the accountability of what did you know and when did you know it? Did you know Steele was going to the FBI? Did you know that Michael Sussman, your lawyer, was going to James Baker to plant information? What did you know about Nellie Orr and Bruce Orr foisting this information upon the FBI? She has been able to get away with silence on what is are serious questions of accountability on the greatest political dirty trick ever carried out in American history.
Greg Jarrett?
Well, John is absolutely right. You know, Hillary Clinton has, you know, two standard excuses. One is, oh, gee, that's been debunked. And the other is, you know, I had nothing to do with that and I don't remember. And you see that repeatedly, for example, in her FBI interview, which was on July 2nd, 2006.
By the way, how unusual would it be for somebody in a criminal case to allow two of her closest aides in the room at the time she's being interviewed by the FBI? This is after they changed the standard from the legal standard of gross negligence to extreme carelessness. And Peter Strzok is telling Lisa Page, the fix is in. We know that Loretta Lynch is never going to indict her.
Right.
We're just going through the motions.
Well, it's extraordinary. And the inspector general found it to be extraordinary and suspicious and in violation, by the way, of the code of professional responsibility to act as an attorney in the same room of a suspect when you're a witness in that suspect's case. I mean, and Comey admitted that people in the Hillary Clinton orbit lied. And when asked by Congress under oath, well, why weren't they prosecuted? And his answer was, well, you know, some people have bad memories and get their facts wrong. You tell that to all of the process crime victims in the Mueller case, Michael Flynn, who told the truth and was prosecuted nevertheless for lying. So, I mean, there's clearly a double standard here. But, you know, I spent an entire chapter in my book, Chapter 4, talking about Clinton corruption and how she put a for sale sign on the door of her office at the Department of State. You're right, Sean, $145 million coming from Russian sources connected to Uranium One. And, you know, she presides over the committee that approves the sale of 20% of America's uranium assets. At the same time, her husband's pocketing a fact check and from Russia, and $145 million going into their foundation. I mean, this is just rank corruption, and yet she has never been held accountable for any of that. She is, you know, Teflon Hillary.
You know, John, I think Greg is right, but we have a two-tier justice system. All right, quick break, more with John Solomon. He is the executive vice president, investigative reporter for The Hill, and, of course, best-selling author Greg Jarrett, legal analyst for Fox News. Right, as we continue with John Solomon and Greg Jarrett, how is it possible that Bill Clinton, during the time that Putin's thugs are in America committing all of these crimes that are being chronicled by an FBI agent within Putin's network, right, William Campbell, again, bribery, extortion, kickbacks, money laundering, etc.,
right,
and yet during this time, Bill Clinton is trying to meet with nuclear regulators in Russia. He gets paid twice his normal speaking fee, but instead of meeting those regulators, he actually meets with Putin himself, and the approval goes through, which makes no sense because we need to import uranium, the foundational material of nuclear weapons, and we give 20% of it away to Putin's network. They said it would never leave the United States. We know now that's not true. And yet, in fact, all of this happens and $145 million gets sent back, kicked back to the Clinton Foundation. How is that not a big deal? And how is it not a big deal that she paid for the Russian dossier full of lies and Mueller ignores the entire thing?
It is remarkable. And, you know, 10 years, it's actually been 10 years since Doug Campbell chronicled what the Russians were doing inside the United States, the criminal enterprise they ran through their nuclear company, Rosatom, and its U.S. arm. And 10 years later, we can see the consequences of the Clinton-Obama policy. And how do we see it? Today, according to nuclear companies that have testified recently in Congress, and some who showed up recently in a Hill article, we are now reliant on 40% of our uranium comes from Russia. That's not the sort of posture we want to be in the United States, to have to rely on a frenemy for one of our key nuclear fuels. That is the ultimate result of the Obama administration's policy of capitulation to Russia at a time when its own company was engaged in criminality. That's not in dispute. There are convictions now. We opened the door for that company to get not only the Uranium One assets, which are, you know, raw assets, but billions upon billions of dollars of utility contracts were approved by the Obama administration on Hillary Clinton's watch to give Russia a marketplace in the United States. And today, we are more indebted to Russian uranium than we were the day that Hillary Clinton took office. That's one of the legacies that gets lost in this conversation. But we're less safe today as a result of those decision-making.
Greg?
John is absolutely right. And what's really tragic is we knew that the Loretta Lynch Department of Justice under Barack Obama was never going to seriously investigate Hillary Clinton over Uranium One and all of the other suspicious corrupt acts. But then when President Trump was elected, he chose, sadly, a feckless and incompetent attorney general in Jeff Sessions, who was in way over his head, should have pursued it, didn't. And, of course, the FBI, which was always Hillary Clinton's protector, took no action. There was a faux investigation that was deep-sixed. And, you know, it's a lot of work for the new Attorney General, William Barr, who is probably among the most competent attorney generals we've ever had. But, you know, there's so much on his plate now that one wonders whether he will ever get around to Uranium One.
Unbelievable. Great work. We'll have this latest breaking development tonight. John and Greg tonight on Hannity, 9 Eastern, Fox News. Thank you both for being with us.
Donald Trump will be welcomed to Britain today by the Queen.
Welcomed by some. I will welcome the President of the United States here.
I know you will.
There'll be thousands running to the streets with their baby blimps
exercising
and their posters.
Exercising their democratic
absolutely right.
Rights to protest.
Perfectly entitled to do it. I'm perfectly entitled to say, I think actually in D-Day anniversary week, a little bit disrespectful to be waving baby balloons all around the place at the President of the United States.
All right, that was Piers Morgan on his morning show being absolutely, positively 1,000% correct. 24 now till the top of the hour. Glad you're with us. Nigel Farage joins us, and he is the leader of the Brexit Party since 2019. He's been a friend of the show, and as a member of the European Parliament for the Southeast England constituency since 1999, he's here to talk about all the comings and goings of all that's happening to our friends in Great Britain and where this is all heading. It looks like they're headed towards a new prime minister perhaps any week now. And the issue of Brexit has not been resolved at all, and there's no consensus on how to actually do it. I still think that Nigel would be a great prime minister. He laughs every time I say it. How are you?
Well, Sean, hello. Who knows? Maybe that's a bit closer now than it was when we spoke previously. Because
well, maybe when I went to England and I tried to talk you into it and you laughed at me, maybe now you'll see that Hannity's not so dumb.
Well, in the end, your message always gets through, Sean, of course. You know, I set up this Brexit party just 8 weeks ago. And in the European elections, a national election that took place 2 weeks ago, we topped the poll, we beat the other parties, and we did it by an absolute mile. And what it says is the public want one thing, and our career politicians in Westminster want another. It's been 3 years now. 3 years since the Brexit result. We're no closer to any resolution. It's cost the Prime Minister her job. We're going to get a new Prime Minister within the next 6 or 7 weeks.
Okay, who's it going to be? Corbyn?
Well, I mean, Boris is the favourite. Boris Johnson is the favourite because he's the one with the personality. He's the one within the Conservative Party that people know. But there are some big questions about his courage. You know, he talks a good game, but he doesn't always deliver.
Well, okay, so walk through the players in this. And why has Theresa May seemed almost incapacitated in her ability to make a decision and get a deal done? I mean, she's had, what, 5 opportunities now to go to bat for what the people of Great Britain wanted, and she doesn't do it.
No, she came up with a deal, which was in fact a new European treaty, which took us out of the EU in name only. It would have left us paying huge sums of money. I mean, $50 billion just to leave without any guarantee of anything in return. I mean, it's rather like a ransom, as if we were sort of held hostage by Mr. Juncker and all the bureaucrats in Brussels. So an expensive deal, one that did not guarantee it would free us from EU rules. And that's why, quite rightly, in the end, it did get rejected. So she's gone with it. And look, Sean, the new date is the 31st of October, all right? That is the date we are now supposed to leave. It's almost exactly 5 months from now. And actually, we don't need a deal to leave. We can just leave on WTO terms, save ourselves $50 billion, and get on negotiating with countries like America, with whom we'd have a better, brighter future.
All right, the most important thing to me is that I really think financially, economically, for Great Britain's sake, that it must continue with Brexit. I am concerned about a second vote on this. What are the possibilities that happens?
Well, I think topping the poll, winning those European elections as dramatically as I did 2 weeks ago, I haven't heard anyone mention a second vote since then, because they know they'd lose it. They know they'd lose it. So that seems to have gone down the agenda a little bit, I'm pleased to say. But we are still at this stalemate position. And all I can say is that confidence in both the Labour Party, under the awful Jeremy Corbyn, the Conservative Party, who are looking for a new leader, confidence in our two parties has never been lower than it is right now. And if they don't deliver Brexit, well, then I will take the Brexit Party, Sean, onto the next general election and perhaps stun them with the result.
All right. Why is it set in terms of who the leaders of the two parties would be? Why not a person like yourself?
If we had a presidential system like you have in America, I would run. All right. I would run. And I think given where things are at the moment, I would have a very, very good chance. It doesn't work that way. We're an old country with an old system, one arguably that's somewhat out of date. And it's very, very difficult for anyone new to break through. But, hey, I'm getting closer.
Well, I think you're getting closer. But more importantly, you know, what have the difficulties been for the people of Great Britain as it relates to being part of the European Union? And what are the benefits the minute that you're able to negotiate your own trade deals with the president, who is obviously very fond of Great Britain? He could not have received a better welcome, well, but for the London mayor, who's a nut. I thought the Queen and the royal family were very gracious to our president. And I think the president has a fondness and recognizes the great bond that we two countries have together, and wants Great Britain to do well, wants to have, you know, the best trade deals available for both parties. And I see nothing but a bright future ahead if we stay together.
Well, I agree with that. And it doesn't just apply to trade. It applies, of course, to NATO, where Britain, freed from the European Union, could start to put some real pressure on the other European countries to start paying their 2%. You know, if they want American protection, they've got to pay the membership fee. It also, of course, applies to intelligence sharing, where, you know, we work together incredibly closely against international terrorism and those kind of problems that the world faces. And I can tell you that I spent some time with the president this afternoon. I went to see him at Woody Johnson, the U.S. ambassador's house. He was in an absolutely ebullient mood. He's having a fantastic time in London. I think he really, really enjoyed his time with the Queen. The state banquet last night was just a complete triumph. So it's been a very, very good couple of days before he heads off, of course, to Normandy and heads off to Omaha Beach to pay tribute to, well, they are now the last survivors, aren't they, of that generation who did those incredible things 75 years ago for democracy. So it's a big, big week for the president. But yeah, I talked to him tonight, and look, he is really optimistic that if Britain's got the self-confidence to free herself from this club, you know, we could do a trade deal between us. And he said, his words,
by the way, it'll be better than anybody else in Europe.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he said it'd be phenomenal. That's how optimistic and bullish Donald Trump is about this deal. Our problem is our leaders in both the Labour and Conservative parties, they lack self-confidence. They lack
You know what really ticked me off was when Angela Merkel made the deal with Putin, billions of dollars in for the lifeblood of everybody's economy, which is energy. And we know Putin is hostile. We know it's a hostile regime. He's a hostile actor. And for the first time, now, since Trump has been president, the U.S. is now energy independent. We're now a net exporter of energy between natural gas, oil, and coal. And, you know, what I would like to figure out is how do we get this energy to our Western European allies at a cheaper rate so that you're not dependent on a country that's not reliable. And if Putin gets pissed off, he just turns off the spigot and all hell breaks loose in the entire Western European economies.
Well, I agree with that. And what an irony that, you know, all the leftists all over the world accused Trump of Russian collusion, and we've had Mueller. And
it's ridiculous. He's bringing Russia to its knees by producing more oil and deregulating the entire energy industry.
Absolutely. And then you look at Germany, who've made themselves wholly dependent upon Russia for gas, as you quite rightly say. And remember this, Gerhard Schroeder, the former German chancellor before Merkel, guess who he works for now?
Oh.
A Russian gas company.
Good grief. Shocking.
Yep, that's the truth. I know.
Shocking.
I know.
I'm shocked. By the way, there's corruption in your country, and look at what they tried to do here by using Russian lies to influence an election and steal an election and then undermine a duly elected president. So I understand quite well.
Yeah, you know, and Trump, when he was in Germany last, actually called it out. You know, he called out this hypocrisy on behalf of Germany. But look, I think America, you know, you are, as you say now, an energy exporter, puts you in a powerful place. And, you know, it means you're not dependent upon Putin or indeed many of the Arab states who, of course, could, as they did back in 1973, if they wanted to, turn off the tap. So, yeah, you're getting it right. You're leading the way. Once we get Brexit, we will start to follow you. But at the moment, we've been so badly let down by the British Parliament, but it's unfinished business. And I can tell you one thing, British public opinion has not changed one little bit. We will get there. It's just going to take longer than it should have done.
What would your path to a potential prime ministership be?
Well, I think the truth of it now is the Brexit Party's support is so strong that the Conservatives, I do not believe the Conservatives now can win the next general election without doing this, without the support and doing a deal of some kind with the Brexit Party. So that's how I see the future. Exactly how it plays out, I don't know. But they could, of course, you know, maybe not need me if they really have the courage to go for it. But I think without me there, they're just too establishment.
Well, I think you've been a little too reluctant, if you don't mind me being a little bit critical. Because you led the entire effort and you're far more articulate and passionate about the issue than many others. And more importantly, I think you understand the fundamentals of free markets and conservatism and the importance of this great alliance between the U.S. and Great Britain. And, you know, I'm sure as you watch these anti-Trump protests and this idiotic mayor of London, who frankly ought to be paying attention to the violence that's taking place in his own city, and yet you haven't put your hat in the ring yet, and I'd like to see it there.
Well, all I can tell you, Sean, is I'm now back in the game. I'm back in it big time. You know, as I say, I'm leading this party. There was an opinion poll on Sunday just gone, immediately after we won the European elections, that actually showed us top for the next general election. So it's volatile in UK politics, but I'm very much back in the game. And as you say, you know, I do get free markets. I did work in markets. I mean, I worked for American companies for 20 years before I got involved in politics. So I do have a strong feel and a strong passion for all of this. And I tell you what, they've now got to fight me. And I did promise to do it again. It would be this time, no more Mr. Nice Guy. So I'm after them.
I don't think you've ever been described as Mr. Nice Guy, and I've known you for many years now. When you met with the president today, now I know that you have a strong contingency of leftists in Great Britain and all of Europe, but you still have all these people that support the president, and I don't think that the royal family really, I mean, they rolled out the red carpet for the president. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that happened?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that the Americans are regarded very highly by the Queen. Don't forget, our Queen is 93, all right? She's been on the throne now for 67 years. When D-Day happened, she was actually in military uniform. So she remembers the massive contribution America made. You know, she was alive during it, and that's quite important. But also, you know, I think there was a meeting, if you remember, at Windsor, a brief at Windsor last year when Donald Trump was in the UK for a sort of quick working visit. And from what I can see, from what I can make of it, the Queen and Donald Trump have formed a good rapport. And that's got to be a good thing for all of us.
Yeah, no, it's got to be. But overall, what's happened is we've seen the changes that have happened all throughout Europe. I'll tell you what I'm very afraid of, and maybe you can shed some light on this. And when I reported on no-go zones, I was ostracized and criticized and told that they don't exist. Do no-go zones exist in Europe? Because I've actually had reporters that have reported from no-go zones. Number one, how many Sharia courts exist in Great Britain alone? And number three, taking in all of this new population, what impact has it had on Europe as a whole?
Well, I mean, the first thing to say is there were, last count, 83 Sharia courts operating within the United Kingdom.
Slow down. 83 Sharia courts separate, yes, and apart from the justice system that is Great Britain's.
Yep, absolutely. That's the fact. That's what's happening. On no-go zones, there's a guy called Raheem Kassam, who's a former press officer of mine. He published a book last year called No-Go Zones. He spent months traveling around Europe, going to places like Malmo in Sweden, etc. And I can heartily, if I wrote the foreword to the book, okay, so I can heartily recommend it.
All right, Nigel Farage, thank you so much for being with us, as always. And it's going to be very interesting to watch the next days, weeks, and months in Great Britain. And we wish you well, my friend.
Thank you very much.
By the way, I'd love to come visit you at 10 Downing Street. Do I get an invite if, in fact, that happens?
I tell you what, you'll be one of the first in, I promise you.
Nigel Farage, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. When we come back, News Roundup, Information Overload, Kayleigh McEnany, and also Jeff Lord. He wrote a new book, Swamp Wars, Donald Trump and the New American Populism versus the Old Order. And we'll get to your calls. Final hour, 800-941-SEAN is our number.
Our final News Roundup and Information Overload Hour.
We're about to find out if the new president of our country is going to do what Russia wants once he's commander-in-chief of the U.S. military. We haven't ever had to reckon with the possibility that somebody has ascended to the presidency of the United States to serve the interests of another country rather than our own. What's the corrective to that? How do you remedy that? These are no longer hypothetical questions. This is where we are. He received the Order of Friendship from Vladimir Putin personally, the highest civilian award that Russia gives to non-Russian citizens. Somehow, Rex Tillerson ended up as U.S. Secretary of State under Donald Trump, who he'd never met. China and Russia can do this today, now, whenever they want to. In other words, we're relying on their good graces that they're not. And it is like negative 50 degrees in the Dakotas right now. What would happen if Russia killed the power in Fargo today?
Fargo has enough oil, natural gas on its own. It's not going to be a problem. Anyway, glad you're with us. News Roundup and Information Overload Hour. Anyway, joining us now, Kayleigh McEnany, National Press Secretary for Trump 2020, the campaign. Jeff Lord, his new book, Rising, on the charts at Amazon.com. Also Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. It's called Swamp Wars, Donald Trump and the New American Populism versus the Old Order. The media and their giddiness and their happiness and their desire to destroy Trump, Jeff Lord, is, you know, it's on full display. I mean, we saw this last week for 9.5 minutes. Robert Mueller speaks, and then a few hours later has to correct everything he said because he contradicted everything he had said prior. But there was that moment of hope where they thought, oh, wait a second, maybe impeachment's alive. Maybe we got him after all. And it didn't happen.
It is an amazing thing to behold. And as somebody who was at CNN, seeing them just lurch all the way into full-blown Trump derangement syndrome is truly an amazing thing. And I have to say, I think this is because of Jeff Zucker. I mean, I think he's a committed lefty. I certainly liked him when I was there, but there's just no question that he is driving this. And this is the latest example, and now this is everywhere, as you pointed out. But not to date myself, I remember when I was a freshman in college, then Vice President Spiro Agnew went to Des Moines, Iowa, and gave a speech denouncing, his phrasing was something like a handful of men, and they were all men at the time, who were executives and journalists, quote-unquote, at the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the three networks. They all lived together in New York or Washington, socialized with one another, and thought the same thing. You take that principle and carry it forward in spades today, and this is everywhere, everywhere. And that is why Fox News and talk radio and various internet sites on the conservative side thrive, because people just have long since ceased to believe these people.
You know, for me, it's not political. I mean, a lot of people assume that I'm a Republican. I'm not. I am right. A registered conservative in New York. Frankly, a lot of my criticism, my stronger criticism, goes towards Republicans being weak and frankly spineless, and they make promises and they don't fulfill them. But I don't put Donald Trump in that category, Kayleigh McEnany. As a matter of fact, he's carrying half of these weaklings on his back, whether they deserve it or not, and they're kicking and screaming, you know, just to follow through on promises they made as well.
That's exactly right. He's having to carry the Republicans, and he's having to combat the Democrats who are obsessed with impeachment. And then on top of that, the mainstream media, on top of all of that. And it is just breathtaking, the amount of bias, the amount of distortion of his words. I was just on CNN last night, and they were going haywire over this Meghan Markle comment saying that the president called her nasty.
But why do you even bother going on fake news CNN? They can't even break a million viewers a night.
Hey, well, it's important to reach the dozen viewers that are watching with the truth, even if you know, they're not too open to it. Because to CNN, I mean, it's incredible. Cuomo tells me, oh, well, we've already investigated the investigators. We've already looked into the charges of spying.
Actually, we have not. They never did.
Yeah.
And we haven't even begun to touch the surface on it.
But that's the fairy tale land they live in, that this investigation is done and completed. And that's what they tell their viewers, which is why it's so important to go on there and share with their 10 viewers that's actually not the case.
You know, Jeff, as I watch this, why is this important? Because if they're able to get away with rigging an investigation into Hillary Clinton and her email server and her obstruction of justice, how ironic that Hillary tweeted out yesterday that not even a president is above the law. Well, that means not even a former Secretary of State and First Lady is above the law. And such arrogance on her part. But if we don't get that right, and she's allowed to get away with clear violations of the Espionage Act, a clear case, I don't think any more clearer than her obstruction case. And if we really care about Russian interference, you can't overlook the dossier that she paid for, full of Russian lies and disinformation, that was literally spread to media outlets to impact the 2016 election, then used to bludgeon not only an individual, Carter Page, but also the Trump campaign, and spy on that campaign and spy on that transition team, and then try to undo the presidency of the person that was never supposed to win. But only a few people get to decide. If we don't get this right, this country is in deep trouble.
Well, it is in deep trouble. It is absolutely going to be in terrible trouble. And I say in Swamp Wars, this was the equivalent of that old film and book, 7 Days in May, except that was about a right-wing military coup attempted. This is about civilian bureaucrats who see themselves as intellectually and morally superior to not only President Trump, but most particularly to his supporters, and that they are going to substitute their judgment for the judgment of the American people. That is a very, very dangerous thing. And I think Attorney General Barr touched on this when he talked, in essence, without remembering his exact words, but his point was that people who have this self-righteous view that they are right and the American people are going to have to trust them and they will make the judgments for them, that is very, very dangerous. And this has to be stopped and exposed in its tracks.
It's clear that there are certain high-profile individuals that are in deep legal trouble. McCabe, Comey, Baker, Strzok, Page. But If you listen to Strzok and Page, well, they bring the decision to clear Hillary Clinton. They put it right in the office of the attorney general. We know that there were meetings in the Oval Office. Biden was a part of them. Susan Rice was a part of it. Barack Obama was a part of it. Then you've got all these questions about Brennan and Clapper and whether they, in fact, outsourced the type of intelligence gathering that would have been illegal if they did it themselves in America, but they had their counterparts do it abroad and got the information. It's just basically a roundabout way of breaking the law. One has to wonder if they get in trouble here, Kaylee.
Yeah, I think they do. And how far does this go up? I mean, you talk about the Oval Office meeting and Biden potentially being implicated, which is why when folks say he's such a strong contender for the Democrat Party, well, I don't think so. And especially when we start looking and digging deeper into this, and we know we have someone in Bill Barr who's committed to getting to the bottom of this. There's a whole lot of wrongdoing here. We see it with those text messages. We see the facts as they lay out before us. Other mainstream media networks can ignore it if they'd like. But Bill Barr, boy, do we have a fighter and a lion who is committed to the truth here. And it doesn't matter how hard they try to distract from the truth. We will get to the bottom of this. You've done a great job, Sean.
How is it possible you ask the Attorney General of the United States of America to give a completely unredacted version of the Mueller report? Now, Mueller got himself in trouble big time last week after his 9.5-minute diatribe. And then Bill Barr, I thought, basically sent him a lifeline by saying in a joint statement that he had said repeatedly that the issue of DOJ policy and the constitutional consideration of whether you can or cannot indict a sitting president was never a factor. The exact opposite of what he said earlier in the day. I thought Barr was saving him because he had said it to five different people and it was all chronicled.
Yeah, you know, Sean, I think you have said on occasion and others have said as well that when all these mainstream journalists write their stories, they're not writing for the American people for an audience. Their real audience is each other. And what you have here is the legal version of this is Robert Mueller, not to mention Comey and Brennan, et cetera, saying what they say for the people in their elitist swamp war old order community. That's who they are talking to in all of this. And William Barr, by God, gets it. He knows all these people. He knows how the game is being played.
He's also saying nothing adds up. I mean, he keeps saying it again and again. Nothing fits. It doesn't add up. It doesn't seem to be true. And I think the reason that Mueller is desperately trying, and I don't care what they do as it relates to all these people that have been subpoenaed and they can do anything they want next week and they can hold them in contempt. It's not going to matter because the White House cooperated fully with the Mueller investigation and congressional investigations. There does come a point where this becomes presidential harassment and it becomes the harassment of people that want to serve in their government because they cannot afford $1,000 an hour for these lawyers, which is what they all end up having to pay. And every single time they go back, it's a perjury trap. If God forbid they say one thing that varies or difference, the slight difference from what they said earlier, they're going to be held on a perjury charge. No good lawyer would let them go into a scenario like that.
Well, that's exactly right. And the unprecedented cooperation, as you noted, of this president not declaring executive privilege, incurring each and every person in the White House to testify if they so chose, and resulting in a 450-page report that told us no collusion and no evidence or recommendation on obstruction, to which Barr said there was no obstruction. So unprecedented cooperation, and you've got to get to the real motives here of the Democrats with these investigations, and it's impeachment. You heard it nakedly from Jim Clyburn this weekend, who said, look, we've already started impeachment. We've started it by these investigations that are specifically targeted, as Jeff said, at taking down the will of the American people.
All right, quick break. We'll come back more with Kaylee McEnany and Jeff Lord, his new book, Swamp Wars, Donald Trump and the New American Populism versus the Old Order. Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. As we continue with Kaylee McEnany and Jeff Lord on the Sean Hannity Show. Well, the thing is that, you know, how do you get into taxi medallions, Jeff Lord, and loan applications that were lied on and taxes going back decades? And you know, the mandate was pretty clear. It was very broad and originally was supposed to be about the Trump campaign and any Russian interference or collusion. We have four separate investigations now that show that that never happened. But then if you have the mandate that allows you to spread out and into taxi medallions and loan applications, how do you avoid the bought and paid for Russian dossier that was disseminated to the press before the election to impact the 2016 election, but more importantly, used to deny the civil liberties of one American, Carter Page, and literally a backdoor spying mechanism into all things Trump world?
And right there is the reason Robert Mueller doesn't want to testify in front of Congress. Because, again, as you have said, it's one thing to sit there across from Gerald Nadler. It's another thing when people like Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan are on these
panels.
It's
going to be brutal.
It would be brutal. And one of the first questions is going to be, when did you realize there was no Russian collusion? Why didn't you stop your investigation right then and there?
Well, that goes to the Patrick Fitzgerald issue. I mean, he knew from day one that it was Richard Armitage that, in fact, did the leaking, but he kept it going for 3 years and then went after Scooter Libby because Libby wouldn't hand over the vice president. And at the time, Dick Cheney didn't even lie about him.
Oh, that's absolutely right. And, you know, Sean, you and Kaylee and I have all been to Trump rallies. Can you imagine how this kind of stuff is going to go over if they keep pushing this, which I think they will?
You think they're going to push for impeachment?
Yeah. Oh, I do. I think that there's a relative handful in there that have sort of a whip hand over perhaps the Nancy.
So that means you think the Democrats will impeach Trump in the House. Obviously, the Senate won't go along with it. But if they impeach Trump, to me, that is a guarantee landslide victory for Donald Trump.
That is exactly right. Exactly right. People out here in America will be livid, and they're not too happy now.
All right. What do you think? Last word, Kaylee.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. People will be livid. You look at each and every poll, it's a minority, 30%, this hardcore radical Democrat base saying that they want impeachment. They'll try it. But Nancy Pelosi, in a rare moment of wisdom, says, hey, guys, don't go there. She knows that this will backfire, but her base demands it. And when you start having James Clyburn and Steny Hoyer and some of these leaders hinting at impeachment, that tells you who runs things. It's AOC and the radical freshmen.
All right. Great job, both of you. Congrats again, Jeff Lord, on this new book of yours, Swamp Wars, Donald Trump and the New American Populism versus the Old Order. It's on Hannity.com, Amazon.com, bookstores everywhere. When we come back, we hit the phones toll free. It's 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. Quick break. Right back. We got an amazing breaking news edition tonight on Hannity as we now continue literally one layer of the onion after another. This time, Hillary in even more trouble. We'll tell you tonight at 9 on Hannity on Fox News. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. We have an amazing breaking news Hannity tonight. We're putting it together now as we speak. It's all beginning to cascade down. And the big issues are about to hit. It's getting closer than ever. And there's no stopping it at this point. Let's go to David. He is in Tampa, Florida, WFLA. David, hi. How are you? Glad you called, sir.
Thanks, John. It's great to speak with you. And I was wondering if I could get your opinion on something. So the president has been using the term hoax in reference to, you know, what's been done to him for the duration of his presidency, literally. And hoax almost connotes kind of a good-natured punch in the arm, you know, laugh kind of deal, or Loch Ness monster or whatever. However, I think what he's been done, and I watch this kind of thing in other countries, I see collusion at the decision-maker level. Department of Justice, FBI, DNC, free market contracting, all working together before, during, and after the presidency to execute what I would absolutely observe and assess as a soft coup. Why is that language being avoided by the president?
You know, well, the president has pretty much said it. I mean, if you really look closely, and we brought this up yesterday, nobody really cared that Bernie Sanders was cheated out of the nomination, that the primary in 2016 was rigged on the Democratic Party side between superdelegates that they had, et cetera. Then they tried to, you had a group of deep state, upper echelon actors that absolutely rigged a criminal investigation that any other American probably would have been put in jail for, including obstruction, which is Hillary, the Espionage Act, and of course, deletions, bleach bit and hammers. Then it went a step further as they tried to influence the 2016 election and frankly cheat. And the way they tried was to use this phony Russian disinformation dossier bought and paid for by Hillary. And not only did they disseminate these false lies to the press, but then they used that information to apply for. And by doing so, they didn't tell the FISA court judges it was premeditated fraud about Hillary paying for it, or Christopher Steele's hatred of Trump, or the fact that none of it was verified and James Comey put his signature on it. And that gave them a backdoor into all things Trump campaign, and then later Trump transition, and later Trump presidency. So it all happened. It's all real. All the evidence is coming out. Was it an attempted coup? Absolutely. The number of people we're talking about here in the upper echelon is very small. And that's one of the main reasons I go out of my way to point out this is not rank and file FBI or not rank and file intelligence, because those people are aghast at the things that they have learned that their bosses did. And, you know, the FBI is still the premier law enforcement agency in the world. Our intelligence community is the premier intelligence community in the world. When they use it to put their lives on the line to protect us in a very dangerous, evil world, it's a good thing. If they turn the tools of intelligence, which are ever so powerful, on the American people, all freedoms are then lost. So it's an awesome responsibility that we put in their hands. And not holding them accountable, to me, is just unacceptable, because it's just going to happen again.
Well, and Sean, that's a great point. And without making a historical example, what's to keep it from happening again?
Well, I mean, you know, we have to put in place the protections that it can happen again. I mean, at some point, I've got to imagine. Now, we do know that with the declassification of the president, we're going to, at some point, see the FISA applications. And my sources have told me repeatedly that at the top of the application, it says verified. Now, James Comey signed the first one in October of 2016. We now know it's an unverifiable document, as the author of the dossier, Christopher Steele, has said that he cannot authenticate his own dossier, that he has no idea if any of it's true. So that means that there's no way that Comey knows if any of it's true. But he still verified before a FISA court judge that, in fact, it was true. Otherwise, in the words of the deputy FBI director at the time, they wouldn't have had a FISA warrant but for McCabe now, but for the dossier. And then it goes further, because in January of 2017, a full 3 months after, well, Comey goes to Trump Tower to inform then President-elect Trump that the dossier is in existence. It's salacious but unverified. Well, that means that Comey lied either to the president-elect or lied to the FISA court. And I would hedge my best bet that he lied in both cases and just did what was convenient for him politically. And the fact that even the FBI upper echelon thought that he was trying to blackmail President Trump is a pretty scary thought. Why they never brought Donald Trump into the process at any point and said, hey, there might be people in your campaign that we don't trust what they're doing, is inexplicable to me. But it's also inexplicable that the FBI Deputy Director McCabe told General Flynn that when FBI agents were going to talk to him, he didn't need a lawyer. And Comey bragged how he sent the agents into the Trump White House, something he'd never do in the Obama or the Bush administrations, to take advantage of the chaos to set up General Flynn, who they had illegally amassed and leaked raw intelligence on. I mean, they knew every answer. So anything that was imperfect from what they had heard themselves but didn't tell him about, it was a setup and a perjury trap, and frankly, a violation of his constitutional rights by telling him he didn't need an attorney. Why do we have Miranda in this country? So it runs very, very deep. These people thought they knew better. They believed that Trump voters were smelly Walmart people. They believed that Trump was loathsome. They believed that Hillary should win 100 million to zero. and they recognize what they do. What they were doing was to try to save the candidacy and then help elect Hillary Clinton. And the only reason we know all of this happened is because she didn't win. And then the insurance policy, of course, followed that. And we know what that's all about at this point.
Well, Sean, I appreciate, again, you know, this is about the thousandth time you've had to lay this out and keep ringing this bell. But where I sit, I'm going to be...
I'll tell you why. It's complicated. This is not easy to understand, and it's very hard for good people to grasp, as Joe DiGenova would say, these are crooked cops. But the crooked cops are not the 99%. It's just these top people. And they abused their power, and they literally were willing to sacrifice the freedoms of Americans and literally override what the American people wanted in the process. That's a scary thought.
Right. And between the states and the Electoral College issue going on now and the administrative state, John, we have everything we need to keep this all in check. It's just not being enforced. And unless these leaders that truly coordinated, colluded, throw in any other words you want to, you know, that basically come down to complicit. If they don't suffer real jail time, like long-term, what we would do to folks who commit treason, then I don't see how this gets any better after this.
Well, I don't see how either. But the good news is even in spite of them all, the information is coming out. But with the president's declassification is much bigger than anybody thinks. The fact that the inspector general is on the precipice of releasing his report on FISA abuse, there really is no other conclusion except that this was a premeditated fraud on the FISA courts. And, you know, to get a FISA warrant to spy on an opposition party candidate in an election year is as severe as it gets. And, you know, I'm hopeful and I pray, and if we have equal justice and equal application of our laws, these people will pay a very heavy price. If not, then we're in trouble that this could continue and they'll abuse power in the future. But if it happens again, I don't know if we survive as a country. It's that serious to me. Anyway, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Tyson is in Oklahoma. Tyson, hi. How are you? And welcome to the Sean Hannity Show. Whoops. Sean Hannity Show.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, Sean.
What's going on?
Great, Sean. Thanks for taking my call here in flyover country.
Yes, sir.
I've been getting frustrated about all of the negative coverage in the news about Trump's presidency. And with the law being passed in New York last month about the tax returns, mm-hmm. I was wondering if we could start going after maybe Chuck Schumer's or Jerry Nadler's tax returns as well, since they're elected officials from there. Try and see what skeletons are in their closet that they're hiding.
Look, I'm sure there is. The only difference between us and them is we don't believe in weaponizing the IRS to go after political opponents. You know,
yeah,
look, the IRS has their system. It's supposed to be random, but I can tell you from firsthand experience, it's not. You know, I know for a fact that every single solitary year my taxes are pulled and looked at every year. And with that said, I just tell my accountants, just pay. You know, if it's a questionable deduction, I said, don't use it. And basically, it's a simple formula. If you look at the percentage of money you take in and the percentage you pay, you're either paying your taxes or you're not. And I pay my taxes. But to weaponize the IRS is a very, very dangerous thing to do. And, you know, I think everybody should pay. You know, it's like, I don't know why Manafort didn't pay. I don't know why Michael Cohen didn't pay. They should have. If they couldn't pay, you need to tell them you can't pay and make a deal with them so you can pay over time. If you hide from them, you're going to eventually get in trouble.
I
just said, you know, it's a simple rule. Pay your taxes. Don't lie on loan applications, and those guys wouldn't be in trouble. Nate is in Atlanta, News Talk WSB. What's up, Nate? How are you? Glad you called.
I'm good, Sean. How are you?
I'm good, sir.
So my question is, I was wondering, what was the legal purpose of the Mueller investigation from August or July when the Russians were indicted until it ended? If Mueller wasn't going to indict Trump on anything.
Well, they were looking into the main mandate which, by the way, became very broad because they had a line in there that said, or any other area that comes up in the course of the investigation, which means it's open-ended. But the main purpose was to see if whether or not the Trump campaign conspired, colluded with Russia to impact the 2016 race. Mueller, like the nine-month FBI investigation and the House Intel investigation and the bipartisan Senate investigation, concluded there was no such collusion, conspiracy that ever took place. He couldn't be more clear. And then the question became, well, Donald Trump, who was annoyed that he had to deal with two years of this crap, while he's trying to do his job as president, the fact that he complained that he was innocent, proclaimed his innocence, and said that these people should be fired at some point, but never did it, even though constitutionally he would have had the authority to do it, in no way could constitute an obstruction charge. That's why I keep bringing up the Hillary Clinton issue, which is an underlying crime, the Espionage Act. And then, of course, well, what was the cause or the reason for her deleting the subpoenaed emails and cleaning the hard drive and busting up devices with hammers? That was all designed to destroy the evidence of the underlying crime. So there was an intent there, and there was an underlying crime, not the case in the Trump case.
Okay, like I just, so my opinion is that I think the reason why it continued is to impact the midterms. That's my opinion.
The midterms? You mean the ones that passed?
Yeah, I think that's why the investigation continued after Mueller already knew what the Russians did or didn't do.
Well, I mean, Mueller's not going to want to testify because that question that you're rightly raising, he does not want to answer. And I'll tell you another answer he doesn't want to give is, why did he hire people like Andrew Weissman, Jeannie Rae? Weissman went to Hillary's victory party. Jeannie Rae was Hillary Clinton's attorney on the Clinton Foundation. And every other person they hired was a Democratic donor. And the next question he's going to have to answer is, well, if you had this broad mandate to look into taxi medallions, loan applications and taxes, how did you possibly ignore the bought and paid for Russian dossier of Hillary? Right. I mean, it's impossible. He can't answer any of those questions, because if he does, he's going to look really bad. All right, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. John Solomon breaking news report, just how deep it goes in terms of the Clinton pay for play and the foundation and where they get their money from. It's even more expansive than anybody knew. Joe DeGeneva, Victoria Tunsing tonight, Sarah and Greg tonight, Geraldo Dambongino and Kathy Aru versus Gina Loudon. That's all coming up tonight, Hannity, 9 Eastern, Fox News. We'll see you then. We'll be back here tomorrow.